This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
Good morning, DCR.
The number one pick and a Super Bowl champ with the man they can't seem to stump. Do something dumb, that's an observation. CLT make him need to run.
That's
I don't marry trash, DMT for short. Wonder if we best, why don't you peep the score? Sports Center E, gonna be top stories of the morning. While you're yawning, grab your coffee, rise and shine with 98.7. This is Drive Time. We provide highlights from your favorite teams. Dave, Chris, and Rick making plenty of picks. It's Rule 76.
And a good the Friday morning to you and yours, starting a long weekend. It is DCR right here on 98.7 ESPN. Let's go around the horn, say good morning to the guys. Busy. This is a good sports weekend, which we need because the weather, I don't know if you guys have seen it, this weekend is supposed to be absolutely horrendous. Good morning, Chris Canty.
Good morning, Dave. I'm in a great mood because it was last night where I found out that we were going into a three-day weekend. And I actually asked the guys behind the glass when I got here at the studio today, which would be better, finding out that you just have a three-day weekend, that you're going into a three-day weekend, or finding a $100 bill? And it was unanimous. In the control room that finding out you have a three-day weekend the night before is better than finding $100.
Not even close. I would up it to at least $500. And I say good morning to Rick, and I ask you, Rick, how is it possible he didn't know this was a three-day weekend?
That's a great question. That is a great question. This could explain his little slide and getting to know your co-host. We were talking about that before the show. When was the last time Canty's won one of these things?
Did we ever determine when, in fact, that was?
Well, yeah, I mean,
it had to be over a month. Has to be.
Has to be because, yeah. You know, you were red hot. Like, you were red hot for a minute, and then all of a sudden, now I got red hot.
Yep.
Canty, well, we had Carlin in, so he did one. So it has to be at least 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah,
at least.
I would say. Because Chris had a commanding lead. Now I believe you're actually leading, getting to know your co-host.
This is what happens. When you insinuate to Canty that all of a sudden we've gone from regular season picks to now all of a sudden playoff picks.
Yes, yes.
Tightens up.
It's a valid point. Now, Chris, how did you stumble upon the fact that, in fact, this is a three-day weekend?
I was watching the nightly news, Dave. I was watching my guy David Muir, and he was talking about the holiday weekend travel. I said, oh, Monday is Memorial Day. Oh, we actually don't have to work. That's interesting. Not that what we do is work, but I'm just saying, like, I found out that we're not having a show on Monday. Well, not us three as a show unit. And so I was just like, wow, I get an extra day to just kind of hang out. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, but that, here's the thing, though, Chris. Don't when you're watching the news and you hear about a holiday, don't assume that we're going to be off on the holiday.
That's a good point.
You know what I'm saying? Because this wasn't like, oh, the whole company has the day off. You guys also have the day off.
No, the day after Thanksgiving. How many times have we done that show?
Yes, yes.
Dave, we did a show on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's we got right. Bamboozled into that one. Because that was the Thanksgiving I came over to your house, right, Rico?
Yes.
Yeah, bamboozled into doing a show in Rick's
attic. Do you
remember
when we came back from break and it's like, where is Rick? Oh, he's working on the turkey. Oh, okay. Well, Chris, you and I will just carry this thing for a while. So, yes.
Well, it's a frying turkey. I mean, what do you want to have happen with the frying turkey?
It was outstanding,
turkey
though.
Just
it was
saying that you would not. Is it factual that at the time we came back from a break, you were not available to do the show?
No, I was not.
Okay. No, but it's also a fact, Dave, that turkey was delicious.
I'm sure it was.
Outstanding.
He's a terrific cook.
He's a great cook. Great cook.
Yeah. But I love Memorial Day weekend, but did you guys happen to see what the forecast is for this weekend?
It's a washout, right?
The entire weekend. Like from tonight all the way through Sunday. All the way through. Monday might has a chance. Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because I dominated the grocery store yesterday. Dominated it. Oh.
Well, how do you dominate in a grocery store?
That's a great question.
Well, it was one of those times where you just walk in and, like, you know how me with the produce? I start getting anxiety with the produce because I got to go avocados and I got to test which are ripe but not too ripe. Yeah. And I got to go, like, all these different things. She wants, you know, I got to get apples and pears and strawberries and blueberries. Like half the cart is produce. And it was just one of those days. Every avocado I picked up was perfect. Right to the strawberries.
That's actually very impressive because finding the right avocado, not an easy thing to do.
It's
at
a skill.
All. Yeah, yeah,
you
it
know
is.
This, can't he?
100%.
It's a skill because sometimes you think it's just it's ripe, but then you take it home and it's not ripe. It's too ripe.
Right. You would think that that would be something that I was good at, though, being able to judge the right softness of it. It didn't come naturally for me.
It's not something you possess.
No.
Is that something that you can acquire, or is it you're just born with that?
I think some people are just naturally good at it, and I think other people, like, if you go enough and really you start, I mean, it could be melons. It could be.
I'm great with melons. Really.
No, this is something that this is one of your hidden talents is the melons. I think it's something that you can acquire. You know what I'm saying? Like the more you do it, the better you get at it. But there's a lot of fails. I mean, a lot of times you fail trying that, especially with the melons. Got to smell the melon. Got to get your face like up in the melon.
Mm-hmm. Does anybody ever look side eyes at you and like, what is this guy doing with the melons?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Especially because
he's lurking with the melons.
Yeah, I mean, especially during the pandemic when I'm like at the mask on trying to smell the melon and like,
are you still fully like hazmated up when you go to the grocery store?
I go mask and gloves still.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, dude, it's like the Hunger Games now. I mean, you go into this place and all the Amazon shoppers, animals.
They're very aggressive.
Very aggressive. I'm getting with carts. The guy comes up.
Time crunch. They got to get in and out. They're not you who, that you know, if it takes you an extra 15, 20 minutes, you know, it's fine because you need to get the exact right thing. They don't care.
Yeah, Dave, but the looks that they give you when you're trying to do your grocery shopping, that's the part that catches me off guard. Like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Like, get out of our way.
You're in their grocery store,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Get out of my grocery store. All right. So, game three tonight. 7 o'clock, right here, 98.7 ESPN. Game four, Sunday, 12:30, right here, 98.7 ESPN. How are we feeling? Now, let me start with you, Chris, because your Lakers win. You're up 2-1. You're not a Knicks guy. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
What's your feel from the outside looking in on where we are at the Knicks right now?
I think the Knicks are in a good spot, man. I mean, we've talked about their point guard troubles and how Julius Randle has been struggling, but I still feel good about this team just because of the way that they defend. If you look at the first two games, the pace is one that favors the Knicks. I mean, you're talking about the first game being 107-105 and then the game a couple of nights ago being 102-91. So, I mean, when you start talking about it being a lower scoring affair, I think that absolutely favors the Knicks. We know how much firepower that the Hawks have on the offensive side of the court. But, I mean, the fact that the Knicks have been able to slow the tempo of this game down, the tempo of this series, I think that's something that favors them. And I got to believe, guys, that Julius Randle, the real Julius Randle, is going to show up in this series at some point. Game three on the road would be a great time for that to happen.
See, that's the key. Yeah, I mean, for me, that's really what it comes down to, is how well Julius Randle plays moving forward. Chris, I would give a little bit of pushback as far as the, you know, the pace favoring the Knicks. I understand what you're saying because, I mean, this is not where, you know, Atlanta's, you know, offensively just had, you know, one of those nights where they just go off and, you know, score, you know, 120 and blow you out. But when all of a sudden this thing gets, because Atlanta's now a better defensive team than they were early on in the season.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
What concerns me about that is that when the game is slowed down to this kind of pace and you're going half-court offense, offense does not come easy for the Knicks right now. It doesn't. Offensively, the better team, especially with Trae Young, is the Hawks.
Close. Well, you're not going to win a shootout, though, against the Hawks. If the scoring is in the 120s, like that's going to favor the Hawks just because they score a lot easier than the Knicks do. So I hear where you're coming from, but we said coming into this series, like the Knicks are going to have to slow this thing down, grind this thing out, in order to have a chance to be able to win this series. Like, I just feel like when the scoring is lower or depressed, I think that favors the Knicks just because, like you said, it's hard for them to get buckets, especially in the half-court sets.
No, I guess my point is, like, it would be nice that, you know, turnovers, whatever it is, points in transition, like, to get some easy buckets if you're the Knicks, because when all of a sudden you get into your half-court sets, it's not... It ain't coming easy for them.
No, it's not pretty and it's not easy. And you're right. And you always think, like, run it, push it up. But again, you don't have that point guard. And it makes it very difficult for the Knicks. It always feels like we go back there, right? With all the things they do well, with the how well they're coached, it always feels like it goes back to, yeah, but they don't have that point guard. Whether it's the half court, whether it's transition. I agree with you. I mean, easy points would be great, but you don't have that guy to run in the open floor.
But not only that, I mean, the other thing, too, is, and we spent the last couple of days talking about, you know, the first two games and, you know, how important it was to get, you know, Julius Randle, R.J. Barrett going early. I mean, that's really where you miss having a legitimate point guard. Like, a Chris Paul goes into the game thinking to himself, okay, I'm going to get Ayton involved early. I'm going to get Booker involved early. Get to your spots. I'll find you. I'm going to make it easy. Get some easy looks. And all of a sudden, you get going. And then I'll take over in the fourth quarter and score points when I need to. The Knicks don't. I mean, Payton's not that guy. We've seen that. And Derrick Rose is more of a scorer than he is a facilitator. So it's like it really becomes, you know, up to Randall early in the game to get himself going. And he hasn't been able to do that yet.
Now,
his first half was, I mean, game two, his first half was bad, like really bad.
No. If he gave you another half like he did in game two, in the first half, we would have opened the show yesterday destroying Julius Randle. That's just the truth of the matter. He was bad in game one, and he was horrendous in the first half of game two. We would have killed him yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't get worse than that. I mean, he didn't make a bucket in the first half. He had two points.
We would have gotten calls, do you really want to pay this guy? That we would have started to get those calls. So he really, at least for the moment, saved himself in the second half of game two. Now, Bernard King, the great Bernard King, was on with Greeny yesterday and was asked about Julius Randle. How can he kind of adjust his game moving forward in game three and on?
I think that he's going to have to look for more of his early offense. And what I mean by that is Randle loves to receive the ball on the wing oftentimes if he's not taking the three-point deep shot and then back his man down toward the low post. When you do that, you're going to get double-teamed far more frequently. And so what happens, everything begins with the catch. And so he has to catch the ball if he wants to get into the basket, catch the ball closer to the lane as opposed to the wing position and then trying to back his man down. And so if you go back in deeper to catch that and then turn and face and take that drive as he's capable of doing left to right, it's going to put more pressure on the front line of the Hawks, creating more fouls on the front line. And I think that will help get his game going, Greeny.
So I don't know if it does or not, but that's certainly a good voice to hear from about, you know, making your own offense there.
Well, Seth Greenberg was making that same point yesterday on Get Up, and he was talking about Julius Randle catching the ball in the high post. That way he can see where the Hawks' double team is coming from, and he can get the ball to the open guy. Like, so much of his struggles have been trying to force things when he's getting double and triple teamed rather than making the right basketball play and deferring to teammates that are going to get better shots than he is. So I think a part of that, even though he's been struggling, is going to require him to be a little bit patient in terms of knowing when the opportunities are going to be there for him to score the basketball. But just because he can't score doesn't mean he can't make a good basketball play.
Yeah, it's on his teammates too, though. I mean, that's the other thing is, I mean, let's have some more movement. I mean, the Knicks have the most success when they have more movement and the ball moves. I mean, there's a lot of times where, you know, Randle catches the ball and all of a sudden, I mean, he's getting double teamed and then there's a bunch of, you know,
everybody's before, like, watching.
Everyone's watching. Everyone's standing around. Like, move. Get in his line of sight. The one that frustrates me is when he gets the ball and, you know, he dribbles down and all of a sudden the double team comes and he leaves his feet and now all of a sudden it turns into, like, you're holding your breath. Like, where the hell's this ball going?
Mm-hmm. I do feel like when he's been doubled in this series, it's been very slow. Like he's been doubled, he'll continue with his dribble. It's like you got to get rid of the basketball, no?
Well, yeah. I mean, in theory, that sounds great as long as your teammates are making shots. But you're also, I mean, to my earlier point, he's trying to get himself going because he realizes how important he is. Like, and what's crazy about him during the season, too, is, like, some of the spots that he likes to shoot from aren't easy shots.
No.
They're not easy shots.
No, he loves those, like, baseline fadeaway shots. And he's so good at them.
But yeah, especially on the right side. He's almost like he's behind the basket, though, Dave. Like, he's behind the backboard when he's taking that shot. It's unbelievable.
But during the regular
season, how he keeps making those shots.
During the regular season, when he's taking that shot, I don't feel awful about it. And for some reason, in the postseason, it's like it feels like it has no chance to go in.
Well, yeah, Dave. That's because in the first three halves, of this series, he was 6 for 29.
Oh God.
Yeah. So it hasn't been great. So that's why you're kind of cringing when he's taking those shots. You just want him to get some easy looks at the basket early on so he can kind of get himself into a rhythm. Like, as a player, I'm sure once those guys see the ball go in the bucket, it makes it a little bit easier for them to get in the flow. That's why everybody was so excited when coming out of halftime in game two, he knocks down that three. You're like, okay, now the Knicks are going to be able to get it going. And they did.
Yeah, that was huge. I mean, when he starts making that three, especially with how they're trying to defend him, that was a game changer in game two. Because all of a sudden, the defense loosened up. Like, all of a sudden, he was driving, he was getting in the paint. And then, I mean, you see what happens to the Knicks when Trae Young collapses their defense. Like, once Julius Randle started getting into the paint.
Yeah, it changes the entire offense.
It changes everything.
Changes the entire offense. All right, 800-919-3776. So, obviously, a lot of NBA today. Yankees, that's a big win in Game 2 of that doubleheader last night for the Yankees. So they get the win there. The Mets, offensively, I don't think I've ever seen a team more challenged than they are right now, yet they sweep a doubleheader against the Rockies yesterday. The fan behavior in the NBA is despicable right now. We got to get into that. So 800-919-3776. And I have an update. Chris, how long do you think it's been since you won Getting to Know Your Co-host?
Well over a month, Dave.
Yeah, 7 weeks since you last won.
Almost 2 months.
Seven. Seven.
And I'm only a game out of first, right?
Two.
I'm two games out of first?
I don't know. Yeah, do you have the standings of where we are with Getting to Know Your Co-host?
It's 6-4-4.
Yes, Rick has a two-game lead on everybody.
Oh, two-game lead?
So,
okay.
And we have put an end date on this, so there's a magic number now that Rick is counting down to.
Well, this is terrible then. So I need to cater this towards Chris.
Yes, you do, Dave.
Because if Rick wins, then
it's a wrap.
If you're telling me we're done in 3 weeks, then it's over.
Well, technically, if Rick wins, the worst he can do is tie if he wins this week.
No.
Yeah.
Don't start manipulating the game now. Play the game the right way.
If he wins this week, he wins because Chris can't win when he's hosting, and I can't win when I'm hosting.
True. If we stick to the format, yes, then that would be it.
Yeah, this is like game six for the Islanders going up against the Pens.
Chris, call me.
I'll call you.
No, don't start
I'll shoot
that
you a
now.
Text message.
No, yeah. I mean, with the history of this show,
I like
cheating.
Chris very much. Maybe I just want to catch
no,
up.
I know, but it's better for the
show.
Here.
It's better for the show, though, Rico, if this thing drags out to the very end. It's not good to have getting to know your co-host, the competition being over with three weeks to go.
If it's over, what are we going to do?
Oh, look at what has happened.
Here's the other thing I don't appreciate, and this is, again, I don't know if you guys plan this or not, is RJ no longer puts, like, you know, which guests are going to be on which shows on the rundown. So when you ask me the question, I go to the rundown to cheat, and nothing's there.
Yeah, because he knows.
Frustrating, really. You ask me what's on Greeny, nothing. I got nothing.
You know he's going to be on KJZ this morning.
I think Trey's dad, Ray.
Yeah, Ray Young.
Ray and Trey.
Now, is that lazy?
No.
No, Ray
no,
and Trey?
Dave.
No. Ray
no.
and Trey?
Just so, because
so,
it rhymes?
So if his name was Ogdon Bogdanovich, you'd be okay with it?
Ogdon instead of Bogdan?
Yeah. Ogdon Bogdanovich.
No, that's lazy.
That's lazy. But Trey from Ray is not.
Well,
Trey is, it's not lazy.
No, it's not
especially
lazy.
Especially if you have, I mean, if there's any, and I can't, I mean, he's not that big of a guy, but if you think your kid's going to be like a superstar basketball player, good nicknames too, Ice Trey. I like that. It's a good nickname.
Well, Trey is his middle name though, right? I think his first name, his first name is Ray or Rayford, isn't it? Something like that.
So he's Ray Trey?
I think so.
Okay. Now this is a different conversation.
Uh-huh.
We'll get a different to this conversation. Later.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Al from Holbrook to lead us off on a Friday morning. Good morning, Al.
Good morning, guys. I just want to talk about Randle. Like, don't get me wrong, Randle's a blessing, and I'm hyped. The only thing that I don't get is what I haven't seen the Knicks do is pass the ball around the horn. Randle gets doubled, he holds the ball, he tries to put his head through the double team and pass or jump pass. I never see the Knicks swing the ball around, let Randle reposition himself, and then swing the ball back to Randle. So when the double team comes, he kicks the ball out faster. It goes around the horn, and then he backs his man up a little bit more, and then his ball gets swung back to him in a position to do something. And I feel like the Knicks never do that. Randle holds the ball, he jab fakes, or even worse, when his back is to the double team, then it's jump pass, which always gets himself in trouble. I don't understand like why when a double team comes, throw the ball out, swing it around, swing it back to him to reposition himself. Patrick Ewing made a living off that, and I know it's a different game today, but I mean some of the principles still remain the same. You know, when the double team comes, pass the ball.
Yeah, I think in theory, I mean that's what they're trying to do. I think a lot of the times, and well, we mentioned this earlier, they get caught, you know, standing around watching. There's not enough movement. But I mean, I don't disagree with you. I mean, the team is better when the ball moves more.
Of course,
the players move more. But the idea is to get the ball into Randle, knowing, you know, at some point the double team is coming, and then that would leave someone on the Knicks, one of the guys that, you know, one of the shooters open for a great look.
But doesn't it feel like other teams are able to, like, that their main guy gets doubled and then it's pass, there's a wide open look for a three for someone? Like, it doesn't feel like the Knicks have that right now.
Well, yeah, it depends on who's getting doubled, though, too. Right? I mean, that's the other thing. Like, who ends up getting doubled? Like, I think we say it all the time. Like, usually, like, you send a double towards Trae Young. I mean, it's a different ball game with what he can do with that. I mean, he's more gifted as a passer of the basketball. That's why a lot of the time in the point guard position is such an important position. It's because, I mean, that by definition, that position that you're better at passing than bigger guys.
Yeah, but also, Rico, to the point that you made earlier, when you have those other guys moving around, it makes it tougher on the defense to be able to recover and rotate out of those double teams, which leads to really good looks. Like we saw it in the fourth quarter when Julius Randle got that double, Reggie Bullock repositioned himself, and Trae Young lost him, and then they found him, and they were able to hit him, and he knocked down one of those threes. Like, that's kind of more of what you need to see in this series from the Knicks moving forward. Like, those guys that are off the ball, being able to get some more movement, especially in the half court when they're double-teaming Julius Randle, because that's going to make it tougher on those rotations for the Hawks.
Now, that's the thing, too. And getting his line of sight, too. I always feel like he gets himself in the most trouble is once he gets his head down and loses track of where everyone is, that's when all of a sudden balls start getting turned over.
It happens often. It does.
Like, usually, like, when he was having all that, and he still is, Bullock was way better in game two. But a lot of the time it ends up being Reggie Bullock because he puts himself in the line of sight. Like so Julius Randle, the first thing he sees is Reggie Bullock and makes the pass, and then Bullock's been good at knocking down those shots.
He has. Bullock and Burks are your two keys to hitting the open shots when Randle gets doubled.
Let's go RJ Barrett in the corner. You put RJ Barrett in the right corner, I like our chance.
Yeah, I like that as well. And he looked for a shot a lot more in game two. Lonnie in Harlem. Good morning, Lonnie.
Good morning, family. How are we? Well, actually, no, let me not add to that. But I do actually need to know how are we, because the Knicks game is tonight. So, you know, I know, Dave, you're probably on pins and needles.
No, I feel okay,
but,
actually. You know why?
Because
I'll tell you why I feel a little bit better tonight than I do than I did in game two. I thought game two, they lose it, they're done. Right? The season is not over. I feel like if they were to lose the game tonight, they just need to come back and answer the bell on Sunday. So if they lose tonight, I will feel similarly in game four that I did in game two, that they absolutely have to win that game. But I'm not a panic-stricken mess right now.
Did we already hang up on poor Lonnie?
Yeah, I guess they did.
Wow. Santiago on Friday.
RJ didn't like the background noise, I guess.
Trying to just get right through this one. Let's just move it along.
RJ didn't like the background noise. You think he's going to call back and be like, excuse me, I wasn't done?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Here's the one thing, Dave, because I know we've been struggling with this because you hate it with the whole, like, you know, how you doing thing.
Yeah.
I'm sitting back and listening to the calls and everything else. You bring them on, you say good morning.
Yeah.
They say good morning back. Not how you doing, good morning.
Right.
That right there is the
sweet spot. Yeah.
That's the sweet spot.
Hey, good morning. Hi, guys. Good morning to you. And now you work your way into it.
Yes. That's barreling it up right there.
Right. Because if I say, hey, Lonnie, how you doing? It leads him to say, hey, guys, how are you doing? And it's like Julius Randle with a double team. Now I'm in trouble.
Exactly right. Now all of a sudden you picked up your dribble. You're off your feet. Where are we going with it?
If you had Lonnie calling back in under 45 seconds.
Yes, I did.
You win. You want to? Should we write back to him?
We go right back to him. Right back on the horn.
All right, Lonnie. Good morning,
family. I'm sorry that RJ, cousin RJ, told me what the problem was. I know what it was. I'm sounding good over here now.
You sound much.
You
better,
sound
yes.
terrific. Well, we might as well get you a Comrex at this point.
Yeah. What are you doing Monday in the 5 o'clock hour, Lonnie?
Oh, I could join Bob, even though I won't get much of a word in. But I could join Bob at the 5 o'clock. 6, 7, 8 o'clock. You know, I could do the show with him. I could just sit there and nod my head.
See, that's what we should have done, Dave. But, we should have done that, Dave. Lonnie, sorry to interrupt you, Dave. That's what we should have done. And Chris, we're going to do the show, but we want Wishuzen on with us. We open the show, we just say hi, and then we just...
We have a pre-recorded. Welcome to DCR 9870. It's been Bob Wishuzen in with us, and then Bob goes for the rest of the show.
Yeah, then we just go, we get on with
we
our day.
Tape some, like,
go back to our beds, guys, whatever.
Right. Good point, Bob.
All right, guys. I called in. I want to make 2 points. Dave, one is about you. Yesterday, you know, you kind of got me a little mad when you said that whole lurking thing. You need to stop saying that word. It's getting you in trouble. For you to say that other fans are lurking in the weeds or whatever, like, I'm not lurking, Dave. I'm right here in front of
online
Bobby,
lurking.
Guys.
There's nothing wrong with it.
I'm a big fan of lurking, Lonnie.
In my mind,
Lonnie, there's no negative connotation towards lurking. You have nothing to be concerned about. Clip that, RJ. Thanks.
Because the fact that you don't see it, and everybody else, it seems like Brother Canty, Uncle Rico, Cousin RJ, and it seems like Cousin Santy does, it's kind of a problem. But you know what? The fact that you love me is good enough, I guess. But I called in to talk about Knicks. I believe Bernard King is actually correct, because if Randle was to catch the ball in the low post, he would be able to see the wings better, because then he can at least see the three-point line a little bit better. If you're at the three-point line, you swinging the ball across court is a bad thing. So if he's getting double-teamed at least closer to the rim, the first thing he can do is look to attack once he gets the ball, before the double-team gets there. If he's 3-4 steps away from the rim, boom, that should be an easy dunk or an easy layup. Now, if the double-team comes as fast as he gets the ball, he just needs to swing the ball. And if he's in the low post, more than likely the person that's guarding the center, who's going to be guarding Noel, is more than likely going to come over. What's that going to make Noel's job? A lot easier. Those should be easy buckets. So Randle just has to keep his eyes open. I hope he plays a lot better in Atlanta, because the first half the other day was horrible. The first game was horrible. But he came alive in that second half, so I'm hoping he carries that momentum into Atlanta and the Knicks get it done. I at least want them to come out with one win,
yeah, of course.
That'd be perfect.
You got to go at least 1-1, and that, of course, is our co-host Lonnie in Harlem. Thank you, Lonnie, and I don't know if he calls back for a third go-round here or if that's it for the day. You think he calls back? I wasn't done.
No, he's done what he came to done today.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're good. We love Lonnie. We gave him two cracks at it. That's enough for Friday.
Yeah. He doesn't mince words, I'll tell you that.
No, not at all.
No. I think he might get paid by the word.
I'm a big fan of lurking.
I'm a big fan of lurking, Lonnie.
Lurking is a blind spot for Dave.
There's no negative connotation towards lurking. You have nothing to be concerned about. No. I don't think there's any negative connotation towards lurking.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
Chris, I have a question for you. When did you just forget Memorial Day weekend existed at all? Because this is the last, you know, the last weekend in May.
Yeah, Dave, but I wasn't paying attention to the calendar. I'm just thinking about, okay, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, what's my schedule? Because we get up at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, I'm just trying to make it through the day. I'm not looking ahead. And, you know, it was just one of those nights where I was watching the news and they were talking about everybody having these travel plans. So,
yeah. And it just dawned on you, like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Travel plans.
Isn't that the best surprise, though? The best kind of surprise? That's unintended like that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I've never had an extra day to your weekend?
That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
To think that I just get an extra 50% to my weekend? Yeah. And you get a four-day week next week? Oh, couldn't be better than that.
It's great, Dave. It's great.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel about it.
What do you mean you don't know how to feel about what?
Well, I like doing what we do. I enjoy working. And then on top of the fact, now it's, I mean, no school. There's a lot. I mean, this is a lot going on now.
You can't
a lot
take
of activities.
An extra day off?
Well, it's not really a day off, really. I mean, it's...
It's more being a dad than an adult. Yeah,
there's now more involved. The kids got school off today too. No school today.
My kids were off yesterday, today, and Tuesday.
Oh wow!
Wow,
that's like a spring break.
They didn't have any snow days at all. So they packed these snow days into making this 3-day weekend or 6-day weekend.
Yeah, that's for the teachers, though. I just cock the school you send your kids to. That's for the teachers. That ain't for the kids and the parents.
If they go to public school.
Yeah, right. I've seen your public school where you live. That ain't no public school.
It's your garden variety public
no.
school.
No.
With eight kids in the class, Rico.
Yes.
And a teacher's assistant.
Yeah, exactly right.
Kids don't go to public school. Mine do.
Your public school is not a real public school. Stop,
what does
please.
That mean it's not a public school?
Can't he just explain what your school is? 7-8 kids in the class.
They have two gyms.
Two gyms, teacher assistant, gourmet meals.
Four ball
gourmet
fields.
Meals, yeah. beautiful indoor facilities.
Yeah.
Swimming pools.
Yeah, probably do yoga and Pilates. Yeah,
semi-private school, Rico. Semi-private.
Yeah, yeah. Semi-private. I've seen Dave's area.
Semi-private school. Kind of like a country club.
I live in this you know, upscale neighborhood, and you who live in a nicer neighborhood than me says nothing about where you live ever. You have to press a button for a gate to open to get into your area.
Didn't work the other day. Hurley blew right through it.
All of a sudden, Hurley's on your doorstep.
You know what I used to do too? I feel bad.
I love this.
I did it for the first couple times, and then finally I couldn't. It was too much. Is that when Alan and I would commute to the city for our show? Is that I would have him pick me up at a certain time because I knew while he was waiting at the gate that the sprinklers in the front would go off.
You ain't right for that. You ain't right for that.
With you. Now, did you right share the carpooling, or did he drive most of the time?
No, we shared it.
Okay, good.
No, we used to roll in the Mini Cooper. Me and him coming into the city in the Mini Cooper was psyched to be seen.
Let's go to John in Valley Stream. Good morning, John. You're on 98.7.
Hey, good morning, fellas. Just want to wish you guys a happy Memorial Day. Hey, real quick, just, I watch a lot of, like, serial killer documentaries, and the word lurking tends to come up a lot of times before they actually commit the murder. So I don't think it's the best word to use. Just want to throw that out.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I agree with you. Like Ted Bundy lurking bad, right? Richard Ramirez lurking also bad.
Buffalo Bill lurking.
When it comes to internet lurking, John, I don't think internet lurking is taken the same as real life in person.
Well, let's just agree and disagree.
That's where it starts. John, you're right.
So I got a quick comment and a question. Rick, I want to, you know, you and Don turned me on to hockey. I just want to let you know that I paid a lot of attention last year, especially these playoffs. Total newfound respect for your position, what you did, and what these guys do. It's unbelievable how incredible these goalies are. I just want to give you a shout out for that.
Thank you, John.
My question is, no problem, brother. My question is, you know, I'm watching these playoffs, and I had me thinking, maybe Chris could answer this best. The pressure that these players are under in a seven-game series as opposed to the pressure that a football player is under in a playoff game where might not have the greatest game. You got a week to kind of think about it and sort of snap it back in 2 days. Is there any way you guys can give me like a minute or two on the difference, if there is any, and like how you prepare as a football player as opposed to like, you know, Julius Randle not having a great two games? Thanks for taking my call. Guys, have a great weekend, man.
I will say this as a player. I mean, if I had a bad game, I couldn't wait to get back out there. Like, I mean, if you had a bad game on Sunday, you would hope that you had a short week, that you played on a Thursday or you played on the following Saturday, just so you could flush that previous game and go out there and feel better about your contributions to the squad. But with Julius Randle, I mean, this is, you know, because everybody's looking at him to be the engine for this team to get going. I mean, it's exponentially greater in terms of the pressure that he's feeling, because he's never been on the playoff stage before in the NBA, let alone being the most improved player and being considered an all-star guy and the primary option. So this is new territory for him. So, I mean, we talked about it a little bit before after his game one performance, but I mean, this dude is definitely feeling the pressure. And then you couple that with the fact that all of those fans were in the garden screaming, everybody was juiced up. It probably got to be a little bit too much for him.
Yeah, I would go as far to say, too, I mean, you know, I don't know how you felt, Chris, but personally, like, I used to like the earlier games.
Oh, yeah, that 1 o'clock kickoff? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, earlier the better. Like, well, the less thinking, the better. Like, wake up, eat, go play, as opposed to sitting around all day having to think about it. And the other thing,
too,
is
about sitting around all week.
I know. No, I couldn't.
I don't know how you dealt with that.
No, but I was going to give you guys
a bad game. Didn't it just destroy you for days? Like, at least if a baseball player is a bad game, next day you're right at it. Or a hockey player, you know, a day, maybe two later at the most, you're back at it. NFL, you have a bad game. Now you got to watch film on it nonstop and wait a full week before you go at it again?
Yeah, that's a lot. But the other thing, too, with football, I mean, he brought up the postseason. I don't even know if it's really that comparable. I mean, there's tons of pressure because it's the playoffs and you're trying to win. But, I mean, football playoffs?
You don't care how you win.
No, but it's game sevens.
Yeah.
You know, you're one and done. Like, yeah. You know, going into a seven-game series that if you have a couple bad games, you can still win the series. You go have one bad game in football playoffs, you're done. Your season's over. So does every, I mean, every playoff football game is a game seven.
It is. It's huge. Let's go to Tony, Anthony, Manhattan. You're on 98.7.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning,
Tony. First time calling. I listen to you guys all the time. Used to listen to Rick when he was at Han. And, you know, I'm a little nervous. I don't know why.
Don't be nervous.
But I wanted to ask a question with the Atlanta Hawks home court. Because every time I watch the Knicks play the Hawks, it seemed like the Knicks have more fans in Atlanta than Atlanta has in Atlanta. You know, at the stadium at least. So what do you guys think? You think the home court for Atlanta is a big advantage or what?
I don't know. Crowd-wise, it's going to be a big advantage. I just think, you know, in basketball, the nature of basketball, it seems like role players play better at home as opposed to on the road. And I mean, I mentioned it yesterday. The Hawks were 19-2 at home to finish up the season. 19-2 at home.
Yeah, and it's an advantage being at home. They will have 7,600 and a couple more, 25 fans in Atlanta.
So I mean, that's a big deal. I mean, crowd wise, there's going to be a lot of New York Knicks fans.
Yeah.
But as far as how comfortable you with the rims and everything else, I mean, 19-2 is that's an advantage.
That's a big number. It really is. It's a big, big number. I want to get into this, and you guys can certainly speak on it better than I can. I can speak on it from the side of the fan, although I would never do anything like what has been done lately. I think we've seen it forever. I just think it's more public now. But the fans, and I mean, the Knicks fans spat on Trae Young the other night. That is, A, repulsive. B, we're sitting here in a pandemic. I mean, you have to find out who that guy was, and you have to prosecute him to the fullest extent of the law, and he can never for any event be allowed back in Madison Square Garden ever again, in my mind. That is disgusting.
I think that already happened, didn't it? I mean, he's already been banned, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's already been banned. Yeah.
I'm glad.
Yeah, but there's a line, right? I mean, again, I don't think any of us thought that the... Because, I mean, I give more credit to Knicks fans, just New York fans in general. Like, be creative. Like, the whole... No, F Trae Young. You know, we're better than we're more creative than that.
Yeah, Trey is balding wasn't bad.
No, that's good. I mean, that's good. Maybe if you want to, something about birds or whatever it ends up being, but like the popcorn throwing, the spitting, especially, man. Oh. That's different. That's different level.
But how do you dehumanize somebody to the point where you feel like you could spit on them? That's the part that I don't understand. Like, I get being a fanatic and like being all in with your team and being excited about your team, being back in the playoffs for the first time in 8 years. But like spitting on an opposing player, how do you get to the point where you think that that's okay?
I don't know. I don't think
you got to be a despicable human being to do something like that, man.
Is there any lower form of just insult to someone than spitting on them?
No. I'd rather somebody backhand me in the face than to spit on me.
It's repulsive. And you see, you know, the guys throwing popcorn on Russell Westbrook. Now, I've heard a lot of, I mean, it never used to be like this. There was a brawl at the Palace years ago. I mean, we have seen fans go over the line for a long time.
Oh, yeah, the Philly fans poured beer on Clinton Portis's mom when he was playing for the Washington football team.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, like, fans have been, yeah, this is not a new phenomenon, Dave, but I don't understand that we're still living in a time and space where fans think that that's acceptable. Like, I think Greeny put it the best way. Just because you buy a ticket to the arena, to the stadium, doesn't mean you check your fandom check your humanity at the door.
Of course, could you imagine going to a Broadway show and you don't like the performance and you spit on Nicole Kidman?
No, Dave, no.
Well, I mean, in essence, isn't that what you're doing? You're buying a ticket to watch a Broadway show. And how dare you go there? And really, if you're ever caught doing anything like that, they should prosecute you, make it public, give out your information. It's as bad as it gets. Here's Stephen A. From First Take saying fans, and he's right, and I think we all agree, fans have no right to assault a player, ever.
The fact that people feel that they can do anything they want, the primary reason they feel that way is because they don't have to worry about any repercussions, any ramifications, for literally throwing something on another player, putting your, you know, figuratively speaking, putting your hands on them, because that's essentially what you did by throwing something on them. You have no right to do that. You can boo all you want to, but you have no right to do that.
It's repulsive is what it is. I can't speak strongly enough about it.
And they got to send a message, Dave. They got to send a message by doing more than just banning these guys from arenas and stadiums. Like, I said it yesterday, and I'm going to say it again. I feel like they need to prosecute these fans. Like you spit on somebody, you throw something on one of these players at one of these venues, you need to be prosecuted. You need to be charged by the authorities in that municipality. That's what needs to happen. That sends a message. I don't know if it ends up leading to anything, you know, significant like jail time, but if it's a fine or, you know, if it's something that goes on somebody's permanent record, whatever it is, that needs to be loud and clear a message sent that you can't treat players that way. It's unacceptable.
Shouldn't treat anybody like that. Although we did find out with a little, Canty, you weren't here for this, little nugget that Chris Carlin was open hand slapped.
Yeah.
By Berman.
Open hand slapped.
Yeah, but that wasn't at a sporting event. I think it was online in the cafeteria.
Yeah, it was in line for food. Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, they're in line for food. And yeah. Carlin was surprisingly taking forever. Like, oh, pudding. You know, he was like looking at everything.
Open hand slap.
Yeah, and Berman's like, move along. And he slapped him.
Saw Bill Parcells open hand slap a coach one time.
Really?
On his own staff, yeah. Yeah.
And how did the coach react to that?
How do you think he reacted, Dave?
I don't think he punched
him.
He probably went.
He didn't do a damn thing. Yeah. Bill Parcells.
it's Bill Parcells. More from Stephen A. On First Takes. Fans who spit at Trey should be arrested and publicly shamed.
That person right there should be arrested. Make no mistake about it. So the NBA definitely needs to come down heavily on them. But I think the media can also get involved in policing this kind of situation with this. Put the person's name on television. Put their face on television. Treat it like a mugshot. Put them on a jumbotron at the game. Make sure you embarrass and humiliate and publicize who the hell they are. Shame them just like you would do a player. If a player did something like this, they'd be plastered all over the media. They'd be plastered all over television and the like. How come we can't do that to the fans that engage in such insidious behavior? Publicize them. Humiliate them. Embarrass them. Shame them. And in some cases, arrest them.
Yeah. If you get arrested, I wonder, does your employer now have cause that they could fire you if you get arrested and prosecuted for this?
What do you mean? We just did the story yesterday. Were you not paying attention to DHIF? Lady jumped into the spider monkey cage, got fired.
Well, but that's different.
Well, how's that different?
Same kind of thing.
What do you mean? You do something like that. Like, if all of a sudden they show, like, your face is plastered all over the place and you get arrested or whatever it is, I mean, that could be something that your employer doesn't want to deal with.
Good.
Yeah. I mean, did that happen with Central Park Karen?
Yeah.
That story got out and she ended up getting fired from her job?
Yep. She was in the news.
But that's
again.
Why players don't do it, right? I mean, that's the difference is, you know, what the fan that threw popcorn or the fan that spit. Like, if his punishment is he's going to be banned, okay, I'm sure as a fan that sucks. You can't go to a sporting event. But it's like financially doesn't really affect you at all unless you get fired from your job. A player's not doing it because he doesn't want to lose all that money. I mean, you saw how much money during. I mean, what happened at the Palace? How much money those guys lost? By being suspended?
Steven Jackson and Ron Artest, yeah.
Now, how do you, millions of dollars.
How do you actually ban, like suppose you know somebody does this, the guy that throws popcorn, how do you actually ban him now?
That's a great question. Like, I've been trying to figure that out, Dave.
If he has a ticket and goes in, you don't have like facial recognition software where you're like, okay, that's Steve from the popcorn incident, right?
That's a lot to go through to keep somebody out of the building, right? Because you're talking about tens of thousands of people at every single event.
So how do you?
I guess you'd have to pass out his pitcher, right? I mean, there'd be the Gates, there'd be his pitcher, and if you see this dude,
yeah, but that's not foolproof,
like Bobby
though,
Valentine
right?
in the dugout from a few years ago.
Well, you remember? I mean, go back to like, remember when Dave Portnoy with Barstool?
Yeah,
he got to
the Super Bowl.
Yeah, he got in, but then someone recognized him, and then he got taken out.
But that's also the Super Bowl. Like they're probably on high alert.
I understand that, but if ever, I mean, I'm sure you're right. It's not going to be easy to do it, but I guess I mean that's the. Unless they have facial recognition, like you mentioned, it's going to be,
yeah.
You know, if this guy tries to get in, he's not allowed. I mean, that would be it, right?
Let's go to Kevin in Port Chester. Good morning, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, guys. Just wanted to point out that a lot of these incidents are taking place, obviously, near the front rows, and maybe they should just not serve alcohol or beer near the front rows. Maybe that would be an easy fix to keep fans more in a respectable mood. I mean, there's got to be some way.
Yeah, but Kevin, why are you going to punish everybody? Because you got these people that can't control them. You know, one or two people that can't control themselves.
I mean, we're not like we're talking, you know, 50 rows. I mean, I know you want to sit close. You want to be part of the action.
But you're paying. I mean, how much money are you paying for those rows, Kevin? I mean, those people that are paying all that money, they want to go to a game and enjoy themselves, have a couple adult beverages, and watch a game.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but you're not paying for the right to be rowdy if you choose just because you pay
exactly
a lot of money.
Right.
Yeah, but here's the other thing, Kevin. We can't just assume that alcohol is the reason why these fans are making these decisions.
Of course not.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So I understand that, where you're coming from, but that's I don't know if we can make that assumption and jump that step. You know what I mean?
This conversation's been going on for how long? I mean,
for a long time.
Guys, they used to throw, I heard stories of players and, NFL players getting batteries thrown at them.
Ugh.
I mean, the crazy stuff, man.
Yeah.
Some awful stuff. There really is.
Yeah, it's all of a sudden, it's like you go to a game and you're
involved.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's involved. It's like, you have the LTI, license to ill, and just you can get as crazy as you want.
You think fans just get swept up in the competition?
I think they feel like they're involved in the game. Like they are part of the game. And they don't have that switch. Some of them, not all of them, clearly, but some of them don't have that switch to turn it off, and they lose their composure. And they just don't handle themselves appropriately. I'm not making defense for it, Chris. I think it's horrendous. But what else could it possibly be?
I don't know, Dave. I mean, it's hard to put myself in the fan's shoes just because I was a player. Like, I'm a fan of the Lakers. I'm a fan of the Yankees. I go to games. But I'm always looking at it from, like, that player standpoint. Like, you have to respect what these guys do. This is their jobs. So when you go to these venues, you have the right to boo. You can enjoy it. It's an entertainment product. I get it. But you also have to have a certain respect level for the guys out there competing. And to take it as far as dumping popcorn on a guy, especially after Russell Westbrook leaves the game from an injury, like, that's just insult to injury. And then you have Trae Young getting spit on after losing game two. Like, it's just, I don't know how you take it there as a person. Like, I don't. At some point, something has to change. And these teams, these leagues, they have to protect the players, because that's the most important thing. You can't have your players being subjected to that kind of treatment.
I just don't think that people look at players as
human
in that
beings.
Moment as people. It's not.
Yeah,
it's entertainment.
Right. I think they're bots at that time. At that moment, I think that the fan looks at them as just they're bots and they're not real humans. I think you're right.
I mean, you've been to games. I've been to games. I've been played in games where on the road where fans have cheered when guys get hurt.
I've seen that a ton.
Like, I just think that in that moment, like, this is entertainment for me.
Yeah, but you've never done that though.
No, I never, because I was a player.
Yeah,
like, I would
never
do never something like that. Just because,
yeah.
Like, you hear me with the booing. I'm like, I try to explain, like, you booing your own players doesn't help them. Like, you're trying to make them play better. Booing them doesn't help them. I know in the moment it feels good, but you're not helping them. But I mean, some of the stuff that gets said to, that's been said to me or said to players. It's not something that you would just.
It's awful. What's even worse is when they do it to the family. What was the story we had the other day about Yamamoto's wife was attacked on social media? And that's another thing. I mean, social media, people, they feel like they just have a full license to do whatever they want. And there's no repercussions. And you know what? Oftentimes there's not, because people don't even know who these guys are.
Yeah, but I mean, you heard Stephen A. That's part of it. Is what's the worst that's going to happen to me if I do this? I'll get kicked out? Okay.
Exactly.
I'll take my chances.
Yeah. I don't know how far shaming fans that have this kind of behavior is going to go, though. You know what I mean? Stephen A. talking about plastering their picture all over the place. I mean, some people, it's just like, I get my 5 minutes of fame by being able to do this to the opposing team's players.
Or how about people that run onto the field?
That's my whole point.
Yeah.
Dude, I told you that story. You watched that video where the guy jumped over the glass naked and then knocked himself out? You slipped and fell on the ice?
I love that. Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. It's not a Jets call. It's a fan call. Good morning, Ira.
Hey, good morning, Dave. Good morning, fellas. You know, I'm just getting in the car. I'm listening to this conversation. I had to chime in. Except for being a professional athlete, I've probably been in more venues across this nation than anybody in this country. And I don't count writers, because writers aren't up close. And the abuse that I've seen players take, you know, whether it's throwing stuff, whether it's physically, whatever it might be. Marty Lyons in Seattle in 2012 was walking in the back of the end zone towards the end of the game, I guess they'll get to the locker room. And they were bombarding the Jets bench with ice balls. And Marty gets hit in the face with his ice ball. He almost lost his eye. It was a really near.
I think we kind of lost Ira there, but that's terrible.
Yeah. yeah, next time you talk to him, I ask him about it. And I don't know if the fans think they're part of the game, whether they think they spend money, they have the right to do this, or, you know, Cleveland throws bottles. I mean, you pull into a producer called Ralph Wilson Stadium up in Buffalo. You ask any opposing team, you pull in with the buses, they bombard the buses with eggs and bones mm-hmm. and bottles. Yeah. And guess what? The state troopers sit there, watch, and do nothing about it. And I think it's an utter disgrace. And it's something that probably will never be addressed, and it's a shame.
Yeah, you ain't lying, Ira. I mean, I've been on some of those buses where those fans are doing that very same thing, and law enforcement just sits there and they watch it. And you see the kids right there with the parents engaging in those types of behaviors. I mean, there were certain stadiums in the NFL, like we knew as players, when you leave that locker room, you put your helmet on, because when you come out of that tunnel, when you pass that awning, like, there's the potential that fans might try to throw something at you. It's sad, but that's what it was. I just don't understand, Dave, how we haven't evolved past that.
I don't know. Well, look outside of sports, in today's world. What this country is like, too. Right? I mean, politically, and I'm not taking a side, I'm not saying anything, but, I mean, you know, people will attack each other for this. I mean, we've seen it before the election. We've seen it's nonstop. You know what's sad to me? There are certain venues in the country that if you said, you know what, here's four tickets, take your family, I would say, no, thank you. No, I wouldn't take my family. That's kind of sad, no?
Yeah, you couldn't take your family down to Philadelphia and go to Lincoln Financial, Dave.
Nope, to an Eagles game. I wouldn't take
them. You couldn't do it.
I don't know what the new Raider Stadium is like, but I would not have taken them to the Black Hole. No way.
Yeah.
No way.
Well, you're not allowed in Vegas anyway, though. I mean, you can't do it. Sure, you wouldn't know. You're in Vegas.
No.
They got his picture at McCarran Airport, Rico. He's not allowed here.
I'm sorry, sir. You're banned. Much like you're banned from Vegas.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.